Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
Estás escuchando The Fifth Floor.
The Fifth Floor dinliyorsunuz. Bizimle kalın.
Tüm yayıktay The Fifth Floor farnak amidi sobat.
This is The Fifth Floor, at the heart of global storytelling with BBC journalists from all around the world. I'm your host, Farnak Amidi. How many apps have you got on your phone? I was just checking mine and I have 49 different apps on there. Some of them are really useful, and to be honest, I don't even remember how I used to go about my daily life without them, like payment apps or navigation maps. But what if the simple act of downloading one of these apps became my worst nightmare?
He showed me those photographs and I blacked out. I don't know how many nights I've gone without sleep.
The abuse started from day one. Where are you? Share your location. We will come to your house. My relatives started getting calls. I started crying.
A lot of people say they'll take their own life when they cannot pay. It's a trap. It's a big trap.
The thing that is creating so much distress in these people's lives is an instant loan app. They took money out of it and found themselves trapped in a nightmare of blackmail, extortion, and abuse. These stories are featured in an award-winning BBC documentary called The Trap, Inside the Blackmail Scam Destroying Lives Across India. The investigation reveals that in the last 3 years, more than 60 people in India have taken their own lives after being threatened or humiliated by loan apps.
It was not because of the financial problem, or it was not because of the money. The major problem that they faced was the mental harassment that they went through. The harassment in this scam actually ruined many lives.
This is Poonam Agrawal. She's the investigative reporter behind this amazing documentary. I wanted to find out more, so I gave Poonam a call. With her is filmmaker Rani Sen. Poonam started by telling me why she started working on the story.
There were already few reports on this that people are committing suicide because of loan app harassment. And a few experts, as in those who work in this sector of cybercrime, I spoke to a few of them, and they also said that it is growing since COVID because many people were losing jobs, they were in need of money, and this loan app was giving them instant money. And people, when they took loan from these apps, they never thought that their data will actually be compromised and that will be used by the loan app companies. So people fell for it.
So Poonam, paint a picture of how this scam actually works.
The scam starts with the message, the SMS that you get saying that you can get instant loan of rupees 5,000 to 50,000 just by downloading the application. So once you try to download the application, you have to give permission to different questions like access to your gallery, access to your SMSs, access to your phone logs, access to your data, which are saved on the phone. So not many people were aware of this, or they thought that it's just in permission, not really they're going to take away my data. So they gave permission and downloaded the application. When they downloaded the application, they applied for loans. Say suppose they applied for 5,000 rupees. What the company did, the loan applications, they did not actually give them 5,000 rupees. They would deduct a huge sum of money in the name of processing fee or some sort of charges. And at the same time, the interest rate would not be clear to them. So what these people did, that first they would give you loan, and then when they want to recover the loan, they would charge high interest rate. Second catch was that they would start demanding the loan back within 7 days. You have taken loan, say, of 5,000 rupees, you get 3,500 rupees, and then within 7 days, you are asked to pay back, say, around 6,000 to 7,000 rupees. That would become very difficult for people. Now, what starts? The calls, they would first make, you know, polite calls that you better pay, then a little harsher calls. Then the third stage would be, you know, if they will start blackmailing. If you do not pay, then we are going to contact all your contact list, you know, which is available on the phone. If you still do not do it, then they would start texting your contacts, your family, your friends, and saying that you have taken loan, but you're not returning. Tell your relatives to pay it back. And still, if you do not do it, then the last stage would be morphing your pictures with nude pictures and circulating just to tarnish your image and defame you. So that was the worst thing which people couldn't take.
Rania, I want to bring you in. In this documentary, you got the opportunity to also speak to people whose lives were destroyed by these scams. Any of these characters that have stuck in your mind that you can tell us about?
I mean, all these people, they are mostly middle class and lower middle class in India. This is not a problem that affects the upper middle class as much. This is one of the reasons that such a huge issue was not really addressed by the media. And this has a historical context because loans and banks at one point were only accessible to the super rich. But the issue here is if you go to a bank, they are going to ask for papers, income tax, and in many cases, the loan will not be sanctioned. And this is where these companies come in, that they give these micro loans. They employ people who are poor. They exploit people who are poor. So it's the entire workforce in these call centers. And if you see the film, we have blurred the faces of the regular callers because these are young kids, you know.
Yeah, that was what I was surprised. There were so many women as well, very young women in these call centers.
This is also very sociological because in a very masculine, hyper-masculine environment, the moment you are being abused by a woman, shame is more. That's the reason that women are employed. And these are, I mean, it's not that they're getting a big salary. So here the victim and the perpetrator both are looking for money. And when the pandemic hit, it became huge because people lost their jobs. They had to survive. And the banks wouldn't give them money. What do they do? And a big part of the documentary was to come out with a number that this many people have died of suicide because of this loan app issue. And BBC put in a lot of work. The team here, the research they did, which ran for months, to verify them was extremely difficult. You reach out to remote corners in distant villages, and on many occasions, people don't know how or why their son or somebody's father, somebody's husband, why they died is not very clear to the family itself. So this is the fallout of this crisis, how shame is being kind of weaponized by these people with deep pockets, you know. It's terrible. It's very sad.
How did you get people to open up to you? Because as you mentioned, the underlying theme here is also shame. It's really difficult to get people to talk about it. Usually when we talk about these scams, people are so ashamed to talk about what has happened to them, because there's always this element of victim blaming in the society as well. How did you get around that?
Poonam, you want to talk about it?
You start, I'll join you.
It's hard, you know, but in long-form documentaries, it's important to spend time, you know, for other people also to trust us with their stories, and especially with these extremely sort of sensitive stories, one has to be very careful. And it's not about us, but it's, I would say, the resilience of these people and the fact that they wanted to share their stories with us. And I guess it's also about their class location again. I think the courage and the power people have, regular, normal, working class people, when they're cheated and when their loved ones are killing themselves and there is no justice in place. Because if you look at, say, a story from 200 years ago, and you would see that some big landlord had given some money to some poor farmers, but they know who it is. And all of them can go and ask for justice. But here, they have no clue where the call came from.
It's like chasing ghosts.
That's where I think the power of people also lies, in the fact that they can accept and share the stories so that some action happens.
Poona, what about you? How challenging was it for you as an investigative journalist to get people to open up to you and come forward and share their stories?
Well, many victims, they refused to talk. A victim, she said that the, you know, family refused, you know, to give permission. She shared many things, many details, many evidence with me. And she said that I really want them to be exposed. But when she spoke to her husband and sought his permission, he refused. He said that you should not go out and, you know, and speak to media about it. So it's also about, you know, societal pressure, I would say, somewhere, you know, the image will get tarnished or ruined among the family members. Oh, you cannot pay back the loan. And apart from that, I would like to point out one victim whom we recorded in silhouette. His identity is not being revealed in the documentary. And interestingly, when I spoke to him, he said that, you know what, I haven't spoken about this harassment to my wife. My wife is not aware of it. And I have no courage to talk to her about it. So when I asked him that, why can't you tell your wife about it? What is the problem? He said that I'm feeling too ashamed to talk about it.
Yeah, especially as a man and in that culture, patriarchal culture, where you are the provider and you're supposed to keep the family safe, probably feels emasculating.
Yeah, and all that harassment that he faced was before, just before his marriage. After marriage as well, he didn't have the courage to share all those details with his wife. Till date, he hasn't told his wife about it.
Wow. Ronnie put it right, weaponizing shame. And basically, this film was not going to be possible if it wasn't for this one character, Rohan, which is not his real name, because he was the person that allowed you to have access to one of these call centers that actually calls people and harasses people. How did you come across Rohan?
So the story behind Rohan is very interesting. I met him through another source who was into the sector, who was working for loan app companies. Mm-hmm. And he said that he can connect me with one of the boy who worked in these call centers. So when I met Rohan for the first time, I met him as a source and I wanted to gather more and more information about how these loan app companies and the call centers, they work, what is exactly the inside story is. So Rohan met me and he was, of course, not very confident about how much he should divulge. And he said that I can only help you with the information. I cannot help you further, you know, in getting in, getting any address or location of these call centers. That is something you have to work on. But after that, I spoke to him a few more times and met him. And gradually, I proposed him that if he could work with us and, you know, go inside one of the call centers. Because, you see, without Rohan, it was not possible because I couldn't go inside the call center. You know, I wouldn't have got a job over there considering my, you know, appearance and all that. And they were primarily hiring, you know, youngsters who would age between 18 to 25. And secondly, in my entire team, like Ronnie was there and other people who were there, none of them would fit into this role. Second very important point was sending anybody inside this call center would have been very risky had he not been aware of how the call center works. Mm-hmm. Rohan was one person who was aware of the scam, who knew everything, that what is wrong, who knew what kind of evidence we would need to establish the wrongdoing. So Rohan was the best fit. And I was also aware of the fact that he knew how much to gather, like where to go, whom to talk. So yes, it took a lot of effort in convincing him to become one of our undercover operatives, because it was new to him. He is not a journalist. He wasn't aware of how it works. And he was apprehensive, to be honest. He was a little skeptical also, because, you know, working inside a call center for 8 hours to 9 hours was a big challenge. What if he got caught?
And he knows the dangers as well.
Absolutely. And then if you're caught, you will be surrounded with at least 50-100 people, depending on how big the call center was. So that was one of the major worries we had. And it took us almost 1.5 months to finish this undercover. And he went in the call center for almost 1.5 months to gather all the evidence.
That's so intense, Poonam. What kind of precautions did you have to take to make sure that he's safe, or lower the risk of his cover being blown?
The risk assessment that BBC does is commendable. We would not just discuss, but write it down, you know, everything, the possible risk into it and how to mitigate all those problems. And we wouldn't be very far away from the call center. So all these precautions were taken.
You're listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm Farnak Amidi. And in this episode of The Fifth Floor, we are talking about a cyber scam that is destroying lives across India. So when the documentary came out, it was watched by many people. But did anything happen as a result? Did the government take any action against this to stop it?
In 3 weeks, what happened is India's Minister of State for Technology convened an all-government meeting, including the Reserve Bank of India, the Finance Ministry, and the IT Ministry. And what came out, quote unquote, is they said to deal with the menace of illegal loan apps.
Mm.
And then one SMS was blasted from Reserve Bank of India to perhaps hundreds of millions of mobile phones across India, which said, verify affiliation of digital lending apps with RBI regulated banks by checking their official websites.
Mm.
And then the Reserve Bank of India published new draft code of conduct for lenders, insisting that recovery agents should not harass or intimidate customers. You know, they have never said it's because of the film, but I'm just telling you things which happened after the film released.
Poonam, tell me about the reaction you got from your audiences.
The kind of response that we got from public was commendable. If you just watch and read the comments on the documentary video, it is really overwhelming. You know, people reaching out to you, thanking you, and telling us that, you know, this documentary is in public service, in public interest. It creates awareness. Thank you for making such a documentary. You know, it really overwhelms. If we are able to save even one life, you know, from falling into this trap, I think we have done our job. So that was the primary purpose, I would say, to make this documentary, to create awareness that people should not fall in trap. And a few weeks ago, I got a message saying that he is a commander in a paramilitary force. And he said that one of his soldiers, he committed suicide because of the loan app, and he went through this harassment. So when this commander, he Googled about this, he came across our documentary, and he made his troop, you know, his people, his soldiers watch the documentary so that they do not fall into this trap. He said that he was regretting that why he didn't see this documentary earlier and had shown it to his soldiers. Probably he would have saved one of his guys. So this is a big reward. Of course, the government has, you know, imposed certain restrictions. But at the same time, I would like to point out here that since it's a cyber crime, you know, because of which if one loan app application is being shut down, a few weeks later, we will see that the same guy starts a new application. And, you know, that's how the cycle keeps on going.
really valuable job. Great, great work. And you guys seem like the dream team, but I know that this was the first time you both of you worked together. So is it going to be more coming from you guys? The dream team going out and tackling the bad guys?
Ronnie, please answer.
I mean, we would love to. It was great working with Poonam. And I came from a world of fiction. So I've never done a documentary before.
Wow, big change, man.
So it was fun. It was fun. And why not? It would be incredible.
So Ronnie and I have worked for the first time. I didn't even know Ronnie. Ronnie didn't know me. It was just the BBC and the team that got us together. And, you know, it's a teamwork. There were situations where we really had to convince the victims to give an interview. Ronnie holding the camera, you know, he was behind the camera. I was in front of the camera. Both of us really worked hard in making them comfortable. Another thing, shooting Rohan was another big challenge. Of course, we didn't want to reveal his identity. So first, I had to build trust with Rohan. Once I gained his trust, now comes Ronnie. Ronnie, he was not very comfortable with initially for a couple of days when he saw him with the camera. He said, he's not my man, which Ronnie handled it so well. After a few meetings, he was so friendly with Ronnie that they used to crack jokes all the time and we were so comfortable shooting. So what I'm trying to say is that it's not easy to do investigative documentary, especially such long format. It was a journey for both of us.
Investigative reporter Poonam Agrawal and filmmaker Ronnie Sen there from the BBC India Eye team. You can watch The Trap on the BBC World Service YouTube channel. I'm Farhana Hamidi, and the Fifth Floor team was Alicia Joya and Caroline Ferguson. You've been listening to The Documentary from the BBC World Service.